Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Let me call the COW committee meeting to order, please. I will now ask the COW committee to order and ask the committee's administrative secretary, Julie Edwards, to take the roll call.
Trustee Dennis Barsima. Sorry. John Butler. Waylon Coleman.
Here.
Veronica Herrero.
She'll be here.
Matthew Holmes.
Here.
Oh, and Bob Boyd. Chirp, Bob Boyd.
Here, thank you. Mr. Brady, do we have quorum and have the appropriate notices under the Illinois Open Meetings Act been given out?
Mr. Committee Chair, we have a quorum and appropriate notices have been made.
Okay, may I have a motion to approve the proposed agenda?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, opposed? Carried, thank you. Any further discussions? If not, I will go on to the minutes. As a reminder, the COW committee last met on November 17, 2016, and we did not meet on Thursday, February 16, 2017. The minutes of the November 17, 2016 minute were previously sent to the members of the committee. They were included in the COW committee book distributed on May 12, 2017. Do we have any additions or corrections? If none, may I have a motion to approve the minutes of November 17, 2016? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Public comments. I think that we have our new DeKalb Mayor, Jerry Smith. Jerry, would you like to say a few words?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Jerry Smith, newly elected the mayor of the city of DeKalb. I was telling Matt Straub, I feel like a veteran. I've been on the job for 10 days. During the campaign for the mayor and other offices, one of the issues that arose was the problems at Northern Illinois. Not only the enrollment drop, but the problems in Springfield that only exacerbate that situation. During that campaign, I pledged, if elected, to work very closely with the Board of Trustees, with the administration, with any student groups, with any groups at Northern Illinois, to let those organizations know and the university know that the city of DeKalb will be a true partner. Not that we haven't been a partner. There are so many programs and so many instances of the city of DeKalb working with Northern Illinois University. So as a proud Husky alum, the proud head of a Husky household, my wife is a Northern grad, our boy is a Northern grad, we are just delighted to be able to continue to live in DeKalb, to continue to be very active with the university. And so to fulfill that pledge, now as the city mayor of the city of DeKalb, I pledge to you the city of DeKalb's efforts to sit with you and with any organization, when appropriate, to let you know that we truly want to be partners with Northern Illinois University. I thank you for the few minutes that you've given me. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. I would like now to recognize the various leaders of the university constituencies who are with us today here. Dr. Gregory Long, President, Faculty Senate, and Executive Secretary of University Council, as well as Faculty Representative to the COW Committee. Dr. Long, good morning. Kathy Dodeline, President, SBS Council, and Representative to the COW Committee. Kathy. Holly Nicholson, President, Operating Staff Council, and Representative to the COW Committee.
Running late.
We are especially pleased that you are with us today, all of you. And are there any remarks you'd like to share with us?
Yes, please. Thank you for the opportunity. This is my last set of committee meetings, and so I want to offer my thanks to the Board of Trustees for your service and dedication to the university. I'm inspired by how much work that you put into the job, and I know that it's a lot of responsibility, and so I want to say thank you. And I'd also like to take just a moment and introduce Professor Linda Saborio. I'm ending my term as University Council Executive Secretary come June 30th, also retiring at that point, and Linda is coming in as the Faculty Senate President and Executive Secretary of University Council. She's a professor in the Department of Foreign Languages and Literature with Spanish, coordinates the undergraduate Spanish program. So Linda, would you stand for just a moment so people can see who you are? Yeah. Quite pleased with Linda's willingness to do this. It's a lot of work and takes you out of what you do oftentimes. As a professor, that's a much more fun job than being Faculty Senate President, but appreciate her willingness to do this. I would also like to make a couple of comments. I know in this meeting we're going to talk about the enterprise risk management work that's being done. And I want to say that I think it's very good and important work, and I want to thank administration and finance for leading this effort. I think it's very, very important. But I would offer one caveat based on my professional expertise, and a lifetime of experience, and that is that I do not believe that disability-related accessibility, especially as related to technology access, has received sufficient attention. I want to go on record to remind the trustees of resolutions passed by the Faculty Senate and University Council regarding needed supports for the Disability Resource Center. Later this afternoon, NIU's Presidential Commission on Persons with Disabilities has its monthly meeting. One of the primary topics for the discussion is a resolution from the commission encouraging the university to address university-wide challenges related to technology accessibility. At present, we are out of compliance regarding accessible technology, and the feds have a 508 refresh that begins January 18, wherein expectations for accessibility are even higher. I urge the administration and trustees to take these concerns seriously. Over the past several years, Miami University, Youngstown State, and University of Cincinnati have all lost major lawsuits to the Department of Education that cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars to address. As yet another encouragement, if we become more disability friendly, we could use this to our advantage for recruitment. Almost 13% of students in the K-12 pipeline have disabilities, and the majority of those students have learning disabilities or other types of disabilities that are relatively inexpensive to accommodate. So rather than looking at accessibility as a burden and responsibility, I would urge you to consider the possibilities in revenue generation if NIU were to recruit these students and provide appropriate supports. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Long. And thank you for being so effective as a representative of the Faculty Senate and you as Executive Secretary of the University, as well as Faculty Representative to the Cal Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you so much
pleasure.
For all your efforts.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's my problem nowadays. I need glasses to read, and I don't need glasses to see. Kathy, do you have any remarks you'd like to make?
No, thank you, other than just to echo the sentiment of Dr. Long. Having also served on and still serving on the Presidential Commission on Persons with Disabilities, I would agree that this is an important item to be mindful of.
Great, thank you. Holly, do you have any remarks you'd like to make? Is Holly here today?
No.
No, she's not. Okay. Well, the chair remarks. When the Cal Committee last met in November 2016, it heard presentations on the university's continuing compliance efforts with NCAA regulations and the Federal Clery Act, as well as a report on the fiscal year 2016 internal audit. Today, the agenda for the Cal Committee involves two other important areas, which are enterprise risk management, the annual review cycle, which will be presented by Dr. LaVon Neal, Associate Vice President for Operations, Administration, and Finance. And second agenda is the External Audit Executive Summary Committee, presented by Larry Pinkleton, Associate Vice President for Finance and Budget, and also Acting Chief as Financial Officer. Dr. Neal?
Good morning, everyone. How are you feeling today? As we are waiting for this to load, I just wanted to thank Dr. Long for his important comments regarding accessibility for people with disabilities. Clearly, as you're aware, I am a professor of special education, so I absolutely understand the need, and we will continue as we move forward with making certain that NIU continues to be accessible for all. But thank you for that, Dr. Long. The purpose for our conversation today is to focus on the next steps regarding enterprise risk management, which basically is an annual review cycle. What I'm going to do is contextualize where we are now and why we're moving forward the way that we are. Some of you are new to the board, but some of you also in the audience might not have been aware that we conducted an enterprise risk management review during the academic year 2015 and 2016. And one of the important things to remember is that this review was comprehensive, it was inclusive, it included a 16-member enterprise risk management panel that crossed all of the divisions. And the reason we conducted this review was to identify and assess the risk on campus, as well as to develop the tools, processes, and structures necessary to establish an ongoing ERM program, as well as to set in place the basis for developing a culture of risk-informed decision-making at NIU. And what we really appreciated about that, those findings, as we illuminated in the annual, in the report, was that although the ERM review identified risk issues and areas of concern in general, we were pleased to find out that most of the significant risks addressed had been previously identified and were mitigated to the extent through the use of risk management tools, such as insurance, training, and establishment of appropriate policies and procedures, and reviewed as a priority to NIU. However, the review also determined that there was no overall enterprise risk strategy to set priorities, to ensure that mitigation plans were in place, nor was there a mechanism to document as well as track the execution of those plans. And what we did find out was that because these efforts are not coordinated, were not coordinated across the university, NIU was not able to effectively prioritize and track risk. And what we determined through the analysis of all the data from that exercise was that NIU's risk profile indicated a need for systems, infrastructure, and process development. And one of the examples of a system needing development is an ERM system to better coordinate risk assessment, management, prioritize risk, and really enhance risk ownership across all the units. And so what I'm describing today is the actual way forward in terms of the system, the process that we concluded would be effective. Now, you'll see that it says ISO ERM process. ISO is an international organization established in the 1940s that focuses on risk mitigation. So we wanted a framework that would help us structure our way forward. And so basically, the ISO ERM framework suggests that we should establish context. You see that in green, and we did that through the review process. It also says that primarily we have to communicate and consult, and that's what we did with the ERM team, the team of 16, but also consulting with over 100 faculty and staff across NIU. We also know that we needed to have risk assessment, and according to ISO standards, that included identification, risk analysis, risk evaluation, and treatment. So what are our next steps? Now that we have, over the past, this process began August 2015. So in less than 2 years, we now know the way forward, and that would include a review cycle. So part of our system is indeed this review cycle. At the core of it is an ERM team that will assist in the maintenance of this process. So I draw your attention to the cycle itself. This is all about identifying risk, analyzing the risk, and evaluating the risk. So moving forward, we're looking at the cycle beginning in October, and as you can see, through December, the risk assessment elements. And when you look at what are the next steps beyond risk assessment, the next steps beyond risk assessment include risk treatment. So those are highlighted in blue. And the risk treatment, you know, is from January through July. And as you can see, it is an inclusive process. The risk treatment primarily is the focus of the risk owners. And then we fold it into the FY budget development process. And then we developed the process to implement the plans based on receiving resources. And so these again just illuminate some of the things that I just mentioned. And then I draw your attention again to the risk treatment element. Really focusing on the risk owners who are responsible for developing the mitigation plans. And then the mitigation resourcing merges with budget development. But also I wanted to, let me just go back for a moment to risk assessment. The inclusive part, we are constantly having conversations regarding risk. But if you look at the risk evaluation step, the full ERM team and the Resource, Space, and Budget Committee will review the risk rankings. So we do have necessary shared governance components in this inclusive process. We will then culminate the analyses, the risk assessment, and the implement and treatment with an ERM report. And these are just some of the components of the report. This will be an annual report that will be produced by the ERM core team in the administration and finance using data from all of the risk owners. So it's a we will be compiling. It is not our data, it is the data from the risk owners. And the annual report will include relevant background information, the top institutional risks, the new and emerging risks as applicable, highlights of the mitigation efforts, the top identified opportunities, and the supplementary data. And the report will be distributed September 1, once this cycle begins. The next slide really illuminates just a different view of the review cycle timeline, delineated by activities associated with risk assessment, risk treatment, and annual report, as well as the tasks, responsibilities, and due dates. And as you can see, when you look at responsibilities, notice the key responsibilities of all the risk owners would be risk identification, risk evaluation, risk mitigation plan development, mitigation resourcing, mitigation plan implementation. So this is a network initiative that makes certain that we're able to link and mitigate risk across the university in a networked way. Any questions or comments?
Any questions for Dr. Neal?
Dr. Neal, the risk owners, how many risk owners do we have at the university? And then also, once again, the number of core ERM team members.
Yes, let me pull you a slide here. Here we have the core ERM team members. there are four of us, and we are, these are they, and these are the personnel responsible in the operations arm for assisting with analytics and university sustainability. And as you can see, the role of the core team is to facilitate information collection, to conduct scenario-based risk exercises in collaboration with the risk owners, to consult with identified risk owners, to facilitate as well as document risk analysis, identify and document risk evaluations for units, and to facilitate the risk evaluation. And this was the previous full team that assisted us with the review initially. And we will be building a new full team in accordance with the guidance from Dr. Baker and his senior cabinet.
Thank you. And then the risk owners?
The risk owners are across all of the divisions.
Across how many? Approximately how many do we have?
I don't have that number for you today, but I will provide you with that number.
Any other questions for Dr. Neal? Trustees? Thank you, Dr. Neal. Good report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pinkleton? Larry?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Would like to draw the board's attention to the executive summary as represented in their board documents. I'm going to be sharing a couple of brief thoughts concerning the external audit results for fiscal 16. Briefly, the audit scope covers both financial and compliance-related activities. Financial in this context is intended to be associated with the timely and accurate composition of the university's financial statements. Compliance covers a wide spectrum of both federal and state mandates that govern the university's operations. In terms of the timing, on a normal basis, the financial component of the external audit results are distributed on or around the December or January time period every year. Compliance follows shortly thereafter, February or March. And then the final report is released per the Office of the Auditor General's on the website approximately March of every year. Looking at results going into fiscal 16, we've got a total of 12 material findings. That would be distributed between financial at 2, federal at 0 this year, and state at 10. Contrasting to fiscal 15, we were at 1 for financial, 2 for federal, and 7 for state. As a basis of comparison to give some context to how NIU performs relative to external audit results, I can share with the group that U of I has 18 material findings for fiscal 16. NEIU has 17 material findings for fiscal 16. CSU has 15 material findings. And ISU has 4. If you would like to read specific details concerning any of the findings, those are available on the Auditor General's website. As we look to move forward, the keys to success revolve around enhanced compliance resource that will be dedicated to testing and building corrective action plans that are specifically a function of the university's audit findings. We have recently dedicated an additional 0.5 FTE out of admin and finance that is specifically intended to be involved with the compliance portion of the of the external audit. We've also engaged with our internal audit group to assist us with testing, which will be conducted periodically throughout the course of the audit cycle. And then lastly, as we talk about trying to really impact the external audit results going forward, It's important to note that our end game is to really instill a culture of compliance within the institution. And so that is our primary objective, and we understand that that is a responsibility that is borne by every staff member, every part of every member of administration, including reinforcement of the messages from the Board of Trustees. With that, I will take any questions.
Is there questions? Are there questions, trustees? No?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Chair.
So, in the past, we've had reports to various committees. I think it was the prior External Affairs Committee about the number of FOIA requests that the institution has been receiving and the overall workload and strategy of managing those FOIA requests. There was a period of time where the responsible office was shifted at one point. We haven't received a response, we haven't received a report like that in quite some time. Can this committee receive a report on the FOIA traffic compared to prior years?
I think the answer to that is yes. I would like to defer a more detailed response to that to Greg Brady.
Yes, absolutely. We can provide that. I'll work with the Carl Committee Chair to add that to the agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else?
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me, there's a question.
Do Larry, excuse me. I don't know, maybe this is more a comment than a question, but we go from 10 to 12. Clearly we're moving in the wrong direction, but the repeat findings is an area that that you call out here, where we said we had 7 repeat findings from the prior year. And it looks like there's some actions that we're taking to try to prevent that from occurring. My thought is that we probably should get some insight on these repeat findings and maybe do some kind of off-cycle report on what we're doing to prevent this from happening.
Okay.
Right, and so it's one thing to have a finding over a given year, but year after year having repeat findings on what appears to be, I think this is 2 years running at least for the majority of them. What can we do and what are we doing to get rid of those repeat findings?
Agreed, and as I mentioned in the earlier comments, it starts with effective designing an effective corrective action plan. And then as a function of that action plan being established, we look to test the integrity of the plan throughout the course of the fiscal year. And so we beefed up our efforts, both internally and also engaging internal audit. Those are two tangible strategies that over time will pay dividends and will certainly eliminate repeat findings.
I'm assuming each one of those findings has an individual that's responsible for addressing those issues. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, and we need visibility to that, right? Mm-hmm. And we should maybe, I don't know, every quarter or every 2 months or so, we should have some kind of report on what we're doing to address those repeat findings, right?
Okay.
I'm looking at our friends at ISU with 4 audit findings over a given year. They're setting the bar, right? Everybody should aspire to be to beat ISU, in a number of ways, right? even with student enrollment,
no
right?
doubt, that's where it starts.
If it would be nice if we can sit back and say, let's make sure not only let's activate all our resources to do whatever we can to say, let's get on top of this, let's prevent any new findings, but let's definitely get rid of the repeat findings. If we get rid of the repeat findings, then we're in the neighborhood with ISU.
That's correct, I would agree.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Okay, thanks.
Yes, my question is your timeline. So what is the timeline that you have between audit findings and the time you have to address the findings?
Right, so that really speaks to the challenge of eliminating findings when you talk about a cycle that kicks in next year. The audit cycle begins, generally speaking, in the month of May and will run through January. So under normal circumstances, the external auditors have the ability to test throughout the course of that 7 or 8 month period. And so if you get an audit finding in January, what that suggests is that you've got 6 months of exposure against that very same issue in the next fiscal external audit period. And so it's very easy to understand, even if you take positive steps to eliminate the audit finding, as brought to your attention in the January-February time period, you've still got 6 months of exposure that the auditors can come back the next cycle and test against that very same issue. So generally speaking, it takes 2 years to eliminate an external audit finding, okay, just as in terms of a standard benchmark. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that we've got findings that are in our tally that are greater than 2 years, then that suggests that our corrective action plan has not worked effectively. And that's where we engage in issues that are intended to beef up testing to give us a higher level of comfort that we've identified all the process steps that are intended to eliminate the audit finding.
Any other questions? No?
Thank you.
Larry. Okay. The next meeting of the Car Committee is scheduled for August 17th, 2017. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Thank you.
Third vote.
Say that again.
Need to vote. All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. And the meeting is adjourned. We caught that right here.